You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Fantasy Sports Today in hour number three. I feel like we've been chock full of action.
So much.
Rich Giomanello was a guest. We had that interview that I did with Colleen Coyne, the Olympian. I'm watching the replay of us dominating the Swedes in curling in the background. So we did talk a little bit about the combine and all that kind of stuff, and I think that was all well and good, and we'll continue to talk about it during the week. Rich is awesome. He drops knowledge about guys. What's the guy he said from Arizona State? What is the guy's name that he dropped? He said it could be a big surprise. I missed it. The running back from Arizona State.
I'm gonna get it.
I didn't miss it, but I couldn't remember how to pronounce his name. So we'll get that guy. But this is why we have the experts on, because they know exactly what they're talking about when it comes to college football. I watch college football, and I love it. But I can't watch it at the rate that I once did, simply because I do Saturdays and Sunday shows during the week, and it's during the weekends.
Kalen Ballage.
Kalen Ballage, that's it. How do you spell that last name?
Ballage.
There you go. So Kalen Ballage. So Rich thinks he has a chance to break out and be kind of a workout warrior and rise up the ranks on people's draft boards and become like maybe the next. I wouldn't call him Alvin Kamara because people thought Alvin Kamara could be a first-rounder, but he could be a mid-round pick like a Kareem
Hunt. Are you?
Anyway.
Can I ask just
I can't watch as much college football as I used to because I'm prepping so much for the NFL during football season. I'm doing two shows that are NFL-based on Saturdays and Sundays. It becomes difficult for me to then sit down and watch college football.
That's why we bring them on. How much do you factor the combine into these guys? I think it's tough to tell. Like a guy like Dalvin Cook last year, I think people were expecting him to tear out the combine. He then did horribly. So then people kind of were out on him a lot more. The off-field issues, I think, were talked about. And then he fell to the second round. But then he got to the NFL, and I know he got hurt, but he was fantastic.
He's fine.
So are there specific drills that you look at? Are there just certain bars you want people to clear? I think
combine's
that's what different
it is.
For everyone.
I think that's the point, is you need them to clear certain bars. I've heard Bill Polian talk specifically about, and while Bill Polian gets bashed by some people for being too old school, and he's got opinions on Lamar Jackson that are unpopular and the like, he is extremely insightful when it comes to what you're doing when it comes to a draft. I mean, he built up several teams. It was a part of building up several teams that were championship worthy and won the championship in Indianapolis. But he says there are certain measurements that automatically eliminate offensive linemen if their arms are too short or if their hands are too small. So there's little things like that that boxes you need to check. Obviously, Baker is going to need to measure in at 6 feet plus, which he did at Senior Bowl, so that's not going to change. But little things like that, I think, are important. They're big for the individual player, but little things that you're looking at. 40s. It's a completely overrated drill, but they need to be at a certain level, right? You can't have corners running 4.9s. So in that sense, that becomes kind of important. But bench press, like, it doesn't really matter. But here's what I'll say. Luke Kuechly is the best defensive player in the history of Boston College that I've watched. I'm a BC fan. You guys know that stuff. He almost broke the NCAA tackles record in three seasons in the 450 tackle range, something crazy, crazy number. Might have even been higher. But when it came to the combine, everybody thought Kuechly was going to be a first-round pick, and then he destroyed the combine, and people were like, whoa, like, this guy's a top 10 pick. And he was. He ended up being that top 10 pick. So it can move guys up because you realize, well, not only is he a great football player, he's a ridiculous athlete, and he prepared as such. Now, are guys fudging it a little bit and, like, just going to this player's performance facility?
Hang in there with me, Mike.
I'm getting, I know, I'm getting passionate. In Arizona and shaving like a 1/1500th of a second off of their time. Yeah, but that's the way it goes. They're playing the game. They're figuring out how to ace drills in a way that they probably won't be doing after that. That's okay. But I think it's indicative of their work effort to do that as well.
The one thing that came from last year's combine was that really stood out to me was Dalvin Cook's performance. And it was because everybody was like, he's so fast. And then his 40 time was super underwhelming. And it started to make me question the 40 as a whole. Because the thing is, I guess in a way, a 40 maybe, at least for running backs and receivers, like a 40 isn't the best way to get their in-game speed, because there's kind of there's a burst, there's a buildup, you know what I mean? There's a head start. Yeah. So that was one of the things that was, it was very odd to me for a player to, one of the big selling points of Dalvin Cook was he's super fast. And then we got to the combine and it was like, oh, what happened? And then it became like a,
but he had been falling beforehand because rumors about who he had aligned himself with personally. He had already been bumped out of the first round, and ultimately he's a second round pick. But I think the Vikings are happy, injury aside, with what he's able to produce. But I remember, so we were doing a show. It was live, like on Friday. We're doing an NFL Combine show, like exactly a year ago. And we were Leonard Fournette was up. The running backs were up. So we're watching the running backs. Leonard Fournette does the vertical jump, and he didn't even clear 30 inches, I think. And people were like, what happened? Like, is something really wrong with his ankle? Mm-hmm. And within an hour, and the Twitter exploded, like, he's got no explosiveness, all this kind of nonsense. An hour later, he tears up the 40, and people are like, he's good. And Fournette could have finished his 40 and run out of Lucas Oil Stadium and all the way to Baton Rouge, and his draft status was good to go. It didn't matter after that. He ran the 40, and he was fast, and people said, wow, he's big and fast, and the film doesn't lie, so we're good.
Yeah, I'm excited for the combine. I'm really excited to see what Lamar Jackson runs. I don't want to hammer this stuff home, but I am so... Lamar Jackson, I really think, has the chance to become one of the most polarizing prospects. Because I don't want to get too deep into this, but I will say there are certain people who are reacting to Polian and Kuiper's opinion that they should become wide receivers. And there are people who are kind of reacting to it with a feeling that there is some racial undertone to it. And I don't know, and I don't at all want to say that I find or believe that a Mel Kiper or a Bill Polian were racist. I will say probably, right, for how long they've been covering the game, it is more typical just for quarterbacks to be white. So I don't know if it's an unintentional thing, but it's something that is starting to happen where people are reacting to it like, why is it that Polian thinks Lamar Jackson, who's only played quarterback, needs to be a wide receiver? I just think it's starting now, and I think it's going to only increase as this process continues.
I think he'll continue to be polarizing for some. I don't think it's fair to him, particularly. I don't understand why I would automatically put him in the wide receiver camp. I've said on air, I'm not as big a believer as you or as Emery. I'm just not. I'm worried about him getting hurt. He's not short. He's slight. But he's going to have to figure out a way to have to stay in the pocket. As Mike Vick has said, he's a little bit of a carbon copy of himself. He seems like a spitting image. That's good and bad. Mike Vick had very high highs, but a lot of lows. Personal stuff aside, prison time aside, he had some lows on the football field, threw a lot of interceptions, wasn't particularly accurate, and I think Lamar is going to have to do a lot of work. It isn't fair to him, but he's going to have to do a lot of work to beat down some people's prejudices, whether you think they're racial or football related. He's going to have to do a lot to work around those.
It's
not fair, but he will have to do that.
I think the one thing that is making this whole thing very escalated is the fact that Josh Allen is in this class. If it was Lamar Jackson, Darnold, Rosen, I don't think it would be as interesting. But the fact that Josh Allen also has a very low completion percentage. There was one thing, it was going viral on Twitter, I'm not sure if you came across it, where people said that it was two Mel Kiper quotes, and it was saying, what are we doing here with accuracy percentage, like for Josh Allen, that stuff doesn't matter. Look at the people around him. And then he was talking about Lamar Jackson. He's like, look at that guy's completion percentage. He can't throw. So on one end, he was like, the numbers are bad. And then on the other side, he was like, only look at the completion percentage. So again, it's just like, they're two guys who bring very interesting things to the table. And the people who seem to be on the Josh Allen side seem to be the people who are just, it's the more traditional prospect. And then Lamar Jackson's on the other side of that. And they're kind of butting heads. I almost feel like it was expected to be Darnold versus Rosen was going to be the storyline as far as quarterbacks go. And I really think it's more so the Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen thing that's happening more and more. It's happening a lot on draft Twitter, and I think it's going to spill over a lot more into even the mainstream coverage of things.
So the last thing I'll say, by the way, Fournette ran a 4.51 40 last year, which was good enough that people knew, because at his size, that's a really good number. It's just slightly slower than Christian McCaffrey's, who's probably gives up like 30 pounds to him. So last thing I'll say on it is I have said a number of times I think Sam Darnold is going to win out. The reason I say that stuff is because I'm looking at it simply through the eyes of somebody who's watched the NFL for a long time and thinks that's what the NFL wants. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that if I were running the team, I'd be picking Darnold. I might. But I look at what the NFL looks at, and Josh Allen has some question marks about completion percentage. Baker played in the Big 12 and isn't a prototypical sized quarterback. Rosen has had an injury history, two concussions, and now in the last year, and some rumors about him being a little too out for himself, not for the team. And Darnold has fumbled a million times. I get it, but I'm just telling you what I see when I look at these guys, and Darnold looks like the guy that historically the NFL has picked. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe they should pick Lamar Jackson and create him to be more of a pocket passer so he can be this dynamic, elusive, accurate, explosive player. That might be the right call. I'm just telling you, I think Darnold's going to win out because I know what the NFL likes.
Baker has been able to shake what I think are a lot of things that I would expect people to say more of him? Because normally, like, Baker Mayfield, people see are very just like winner, hungry, competitive, ultra competitive. And the size, the conference, all of this stuff, the system, it seems to not be sticking to him the way it typically would a player like him, I feel.
It's not over yet.
That's
what I'll say.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, but people seem very certain that he's going first round the latest, like possibly,
man, no.
Possibly top 10.
It does surprise me a little bit. It does surprise me a little bit, but people probably say, well, he's as good as Johnny was. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that one anymore because Johnny, there's so much stuff in Johnny's rearview mirror. Like, I can't even, it seems ridiculous now that the Browns picked him, but at the time,
there
were questions, but it wasn't totally absurd. There were people that were like, Johnny's not going to work out in the NFL. He's too small. He's not. Mm-hmm. He just plays in this wide open offense, and Mike Evans bailed him out all the time, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't totally absurd that Johnny was a first-round pick, I didn't think. It does seem that now, but at the time it wasn't. He'd won the Heisman Trophy. He'd beaten Alabama. He had done all this stuff that were impressive on his resume.
Yeah.
What wasn't impressive was his nickel for a brain, you know? Million-dollar arm, 10-cent brain, as they say. I don't even know if he has the million-dollar arm.
Even Baker has off-field problems. Like, he was arrested. And
but that was a silly thing.
No, absolutely.
Johnny's stuff is far more serious.
No, I totally agree. Like, I mean, he went to rehab and everything, but it's just like the on-field stuff, right? Like the crotch grab, whatever. Like, I don't personally get bothered by it, but it almost seemed like 99% of people spun that in ultra competitive. And then there's like the off-field stuff, and it's just, I don't feel like it's ever talked about. It's just, it's something that's very odd and interesting that Baker Mayfield, like, a lot of the things that would normally stick to a guy he's somehow, like, they're all just shaking right off him. And everyone's like, look at that completion percentage. This guy can get it through the windows. Like, it's just.
It's not for me.
I know it's not for you. I know that. I think he's
a Big
that.
12 guy, and I'm not buying it. So it doesn't mean I don't think he can start. I'm not buying it that he's going to be a star because of how good he was in the Big 12 in college. Right. I just can't do it. I can't. I think they're going to go after Cousins hard. And then the more I think about it, the more it makes sense for the Jets to do that. I think the Jets would really want to go all in on Cousins, and I think it kind of makes sense. They haven't been able to get this QB thing right. They're going to take a known commodity now as opposed to them screwing it up. Plus, you're going to possibly have a change at head coach if they don't get it done this year. Mm-hmm. So why not just take the stable guy who's been through some coaching changes in the past and can possibly deal with that?
How much more do you think the Jets have to offer him for him to pick New York over Denver?
It's a great question.
That's what I have been battling with since these reports have come out.
Unfortunately, only one person can answer
that. That's
true. And we'll see. We'll see what he thinks. You know, Denver's got problems, too. They got a good defense, but their offensive line stinks, too. So he's not going to go out there and just be nice and cushy and safe. Like, they haven't been able to run the ball consistently well. And the quarterbacks have had problems because they're not great. Plus, the offensive line isn't that good. I'm just telling you, there's other factors that go into it. Probably be cool for him to live in New York, but he's not going to eat up the celebrity life. He doesn't really care. He's going to make $28 million a year at a minimum. And who cares where you live? We're going to come back. We're finally going to talk about baseball with Kevin Walsh, Mike Blewett, after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Fantasy Sports Today. Hit us up at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. If you want to give us a call, it's 84FNTSY. Also have, I got a read here. I got something. I know I got a read of some sort. We got all kinds of different reads. Here we go.
Reads are good.
Excuse me. Yeah. Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. Flatter prize pool, smaller fields, and single entry contests only. Fantasy Factor runs NHL and NBA free rolls every week. They're free entry, so simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. Pete Considori is going to get an NHL trade minute. We're going to do that for him in the final segment because he's chomping at the bit to announce the big NHL trades involving guys whom I don't know. So there was a time in my life where I watched hockey. Just can't watch it anymore. It is what it is. I'll tune in during the playoffs, but that's about all I can do. And I did watch some Olympic hockey. That was fun. The Americans washed out on the men's side of things. That wasn't fun.
Nope.
I think they lost in a shootout to the Czech Republic.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Bad times for them. So Brian Gionta, former BC Eagle, he was a part of that team. He was the old guy. So he's like 38 years old and at the end of his NHL career, but he had this interesting opportunity. So I wish he could have gotten a medal, but too bad. So we have... what has been your favorite Olympics moment? That was the poll that we had up. USA women's hockey winning gold. That's 45%. 29% say it's the U.S. men winning curling gold. And 20% just saying watching snowboarding. And 6% said other. And we had some questions, one of which a guy named Sid Burstein said, I have a question. Do you have to be an athlete to be a curler?
Telling you, the curlers, man, they're getting thrown under the bus. Everybody just thinks that it's super easy.
They have a gold medal.
Everyone thinks that they should have one. I mean, yeah, no, I'm sure they don't care. But I'm saying they're just getting thrown under the bus.
I'm saying this is perfect for them because now people are going to say, it's so easy. It's just like you could have beers and do this thing in a local pub. Like, maybe. But you can't be the best in the world, and they're the best in the entire world at that. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it, that it's not a sport. It's a little bit more of a game, but it is what it is. It's in the Olympics. It's considered an Olympic sport. So I like the fact that they crush beers after the game. So I'm all good with that. And Mike Cardano sent out a tweet. Our boss, Mike Cardano, said, apparently the U.S. men's curling team realized the gold medals they were awarded say women's curling gold medal on them. So they had to work to swap out the gold medals. And the comments underneath the tweet that stated that the men's curling team realized gold medals are what make Twitter great. There's all kinds of Steve Harvey memes and GIFs and all that kind of stuff. And
oh, you say GIFs?
Yeah.
Oh, I say GIFs. Interesting.
Well, I said GIFs for many years, and then I think it was last year it became known that the proper terminology, and Pete is an IT guy, so he's going to chime in on this, that the proper terminology is GIF. Pete Considori, am I right?
It's GIF.
Come on. The guy who created it calls them GIFs.
Yeah, but that's not up to him. That's not up to him.
I thought it swung back the other way.
Not.
Am I wrong?
I have never necessarily, I've never seen a full consensus. Maybe that's the next poll at some, maybe this week or next week. We, you know, do you pronounce GIF or GIF?
I would rather say GIF, but I was like corrected a number of times that it's GIF now.
I think if people correct you, that's odd. Like I was just, when people say GIF, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But I don't think I would be, like, if I was a GIF guy, if I was on Team GIF, I don't think I'd be out here correcting those who say GIF. I think that's a wild move.
Yeah, I just changed because I got corrected a couple of times. So it is what it is. Anyway, so there's Steve Harvey memes and La La Land memes and all that kind of stuff because of what happened at the Oscars last year. So anyway, and La La Land should have won.
Imagine that happened at, like, the NBA award show they had. Like, Drake goes, opens the envelope, MVP, James Harden. Harden's up there looking at it, and it's like, oh, it's Russ. Could you imagine?
It's a Miss America pageant, and it's a really huge deal.
No, I don't, but I'm just saying, like, in the sports world, like, I'm not saying that it's not a big deal. I'm just saying,
like, Oscars. It's a bigger deal than the NBA MVP. It happened to the Oscars for Best Picture. It's the worst situation it could happen in. It is the ultimate envelope opening. It's the ultimate envelope absolutely opening true event is the Academy Awards, and they got it wrong.
But I feel like,
and I understand why they got it wrong. I saw, like, a picture of the envelope. Stupid. They had both names of the movies on there. Why?
Oh, that's weird.
Just make it one picture.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to say, like, oh, imagine it happened at a bigger thing. I wasn't saying that. But I just feel like, you saw the guy, how excited the guy was for Moonlight. He's like, Moonlight, you won. You deserve this. Get up here right now. Like, he was kind of nice about it. At the beauty pageant,
great about,
like,
it.
They were like, it was like Steve Harvey had to. But imagine if, like, Harden had the envelope and was like, I didn't win. I feel like in the NBA, they get super petty and bothered by it, and somebody might beat up Drake.
Well, they're hyper-competitive, and I think they'd be annoyed. I mean, it wouldn't be Drake's fault, but I think they would think they're being pranked or something like that, and wouldn't be down with it. So, yeah, anyway. So other people said that they really liked ski halfpipe and ski cross. I saw that for the first time, I think it was, this year. So that was kind of interesting. I like all the snowboarding stuff, the big air competition, guys trying to do 50 flips. Other guys like Esther Ledecka, which is the woman I talked about earlier. She won the gold unexpectedly. I think it was Super G. I need somebody to look that up for me. And then this other guy loved Chloe Kim, and she's awesome. She was so much better than the other snowboarders in that halfpipe competition. It was really a lot of fun to watch her as well. So people are enjoying in the Olympic revelry. Sometimes I feel like I'm on an island when I talk to friends, but I think by and large, people have been really into the Olympics, whether it's curling or there's been an extreme amount of cross-country skiing and biathlon and ski jumping. I get it, but you know, it still is one out to me. I've been able to watch a lot of stuff that I liked.
I was over here trying to find the Esther Ledecka thing, and I just...
Nah, it's fine. I think it was along. Super G. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I said her name.
The Olympics, though, I'll say this. I feel like the U.S. has been able to like grab gold medals in a lot of spots where people weren't expecting, but then like some spots that people felt were locks, like if those would have hit, it could have been a really, really big year for the U.S. on as far as like the medal count goes. But it, people seem to be pretty disappointed with where I think the U.S. is at third, I think, or maybe tied for third.
I think that's okay.
Which
it's
is okay. Fine.
Norway's having a big year. I think we're in good shape. I think coming in the top three is pretty good. I've realized this about the Winter Olympics.
We're in fourth.
Getting a bronze medal is pretty impressive.
Like, yeah.
Stuff gets decided by hundredths of a second, and it's impressive to get a medal at all with the Winter Olympics because conditions are not standard. There's snow and ice and wind and all kinds of stuff that they don't really deal with in the Summer Olympics. You jump into an Olympic pool, it's pretty much the same every time. You go do the 100 meters, assuming it's not raining, it's the same every time. That's why Usain Bolt is a prohibitive favorite. And when Lindsey Vonn is a favorite, you know, she's getting a little bit of wind on her run, she ends up with a bronze. That's kind of what happens. So anyway, I want to transition over to baseball with the last few minutes of this segment. Joe Gallina, who's going to be on after us on the Weekend Fantasy Update from 12 to 3, he wrote an article on under-the-radar pitchers. You can find this in the exclusive Edge draft package on rotoexperts.com. So please go there and find all the cool stuff that we have written about. He's got this one, under-the-radar pitchers. There's all kinds of draft strategy articles and the like. So we're going to keep adding content to that as we roll through February and into early March, but it is launched and ready to go. So a little bit about this. As we decide upon the strategy that we'll use in building our 2018 fantasy baseball starting rotation, it's important to familiarize ourselves with recent trends and how it's evolved. He said the average innings thrown per game by starting pitchers has steadily declined in each of the past four seasons. In 2011, 90 starting pitchers averaged 6 innings per start. Last season, that number fell to just 43. 43
wow.
Pitchers in all of baseball averaged 6 innings per start. So that's a little over 1 per team. 2014 starting pitchers overall averaged 6 innings per start, and by 2017, that number had fallen to 5.5. So average starting pitchers are not even getting to the 6th inning. We know there's some pitchers using 6 starters and the like. Anyway, here's his under-the-radar pitchers, and I'm going to get your thoughts on each one. Jeff Samardzija, San Francisco Giants. There was a point last year at which I owned Jeff Samardzija and had to dump him because he was getting pounded, and he was like 2-9 or something crazy. I may be exaggerating, but he logged 5 consecutive seasons with at least 200 innings, and during that span, he's recorded a K for 9 of just over 8 and an average above average 1.21 whip. His 4.10 ERA during that 5-year period is better than last season's 4.36 league average. And his 3.73 FIP suggests that he pitched better than his surface statistics indicate. He also plays his home games in pitcher-friendly AT&T Park. So, Jeff Samardzija, you in or you out?
So I'm using the expert draft that you had mentioned before, and
labor mixed draft in which Jake Seeley participated in, and Jake has some commentary on his draft as well, but the draft board is included as well, so you get a sense of the guys that he drafted, where he drafted, and how they came up. So where did Samardzija land in that draft?
So Samardzija goes round 11. The three guys before him in order: David Price, Trevor Bauer, Johnny Cueto, and then Jeff Samardzija. Following Samardzija, the three guys were Danny Salazar, familiar obviously a closer, so then you had a Garrett Richards and Lance McCullers. I think I may prefer a guy like Salazar, maybe even a McCullers, who the guys are able to grab later. Let me ask you, though, round 11, Samardzija, does that feel right?
So that was from Rudy Gamble from Razzball. He had already picked Severino, Darvish, and so Samardzija is his third starter. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If you had Severino and Darvish, who he went up, a bunch of guys drafted two. I'm trying to think who else had two starters in front of him. He might be the first guy. He's one of the first guys to draft two starters. He's not the only one, but he's one of the first two or three guys to draft two starters. So he went Severino and Darvish, and then he comes back with Samardzija a bunch of rounds later. I think I'm really okay with that. I think that's the way to go. When you're taking a guy like this who is solidifying, getting you innings, he's not great, but when he's going to get you all those innings, I think that's important.
When you're doing this now, because this is one of the things as right there that Joe pointed out so nicely in that article, that people are starting to pitch less and less innings. And Tony's been hammering this home, the importance of getting this elite pitching. And so here, Rudy Gamble grabs, you know, Severino, Darvish early, two pitchers within the first four picks for him. Is that the way to go? Like, I know a while back, I know, at least for me, and I feel like this was the normal feeling around pitchers, it's just you could wait, right? Like, you could wait on pitching. But now it seems like you have to be able to get one absolutely of the elite class, but Tony always hammers it home, and I think he's right. You have to try to grab two of what I think is the way he breaks it down is like the top 14-ish guys, 12 guys, something like that, where he likes to try to grab two of that elite class.
Yeah, the pendulum swings back and forth on this, and I was reading, doing a lot of research leading up to this show. And a lot of people are very good on Twitter with putting out important stats, and there's been a lot of breakdowns on this stuff. Jake Seeley's a good person to follow on this, because even if he's not putting out the tweet, he's following a lot of people and retweeting some important stuff.
Yeah.
So he's at All In Kid. And basically, outside of catcher, all of the other positions are very clustered together. So if you get the best first baseman, and you have the worst, you have the 12th shortstop, but you have mid-range and all the other stuff, it's all going to work out. And that's the theory I'm seeing in this tweet. I wish I could get the statistics, but I have to go through a Twitter wormhole. I can't do it while we're on air. But the bottom line is position players are kind of clustered together. Unless you totally ignore them, you're going to end up with a pretty similar picture right after the draft as the other teams,
okay,
as far as run production is concerned and the like. Yeah, will you be a little lower on stolen bases and a little higher on homers? That's all good, right? It's all kind of coming out in the wash. This is right after draft time. Obviously, we can't talk about injuries and the like, but right after draft time. But not the case with pitching. Tony is right, because elite pitching will put you well in front of people. So when Fred Zinke from MLB.com has Clayton Kershaw and Carlos Carrasco, and Rudy Gamble has Severino and Darvish, and as I go through the other guys, oh, and I like this combo, Colette Sporer from Fangraphs has – no. What's that? Yeah, Colette Sporer. So has Kluber and DeGrom. Like, I'm in on that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be the guy that waited too long, and there's a Strasburg-Carlos Martinez combo there. Whereas Steve Gardner from USA Today, he went hard with some hitters and homers, but he's got Archer and Keuchel are his top two. And then he's got Cueto down a little bit further. I know I had Chris Archer last year. It's a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. I said something else. Pain in the butt. To try to get wins. You just can't get any wins because they blew so many wins for him, and he's struggling. And Dallas Keuchel has been a roller coaster ride the last couple of years. I'd be in on him this year, depending on where I get him, and he got him in the seventh round, so I'm okay with that. But that's a roller coaster ride. You don't know exactly what you're going to get from either of those guys. And I think Tony's right. I think while my draft didn't go that way last year, I think I'll be leaning towards trying to do that this year. And you know what? If I do pick DeGrom and he blows out his arm, then I'm done. But what can I do? I tried. I just think that position players, you're going to be a little bit closer to the middle right after draft time based on who you pick.
And I will say,
it's a really long diatribe.
You need it, though. And I'll say this is the one thing, right? So you look at some of those top pitching combinations that you mentioned, right? And it's just like, star. So you don't really have to pair up categories. Where I'm wondering if for, you know, Gardner, he looked at Archer, he was like, all right, there's going to be a lot, tons of strikeouts, this, that, or whatever, but I'm not going to get the wins. Keuchel, I mean, the Astros, I'm not sure, but I think they might be the favorites. Maybe the Dodgers are, but they're projected to get a ton of wins. So maybe he was trying to make the pairing, but if you have those elite guys, it makes it a little bit easier on you.
All right, great. We're going to come back to close out the show. Pete Considori's NHL Trade Minute is going to come up. I'm pumped for that. It's Mike and Kevin. We're back after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Pearl Jam. It's my sweet spot right there. Rocking out. Last segment, 3 hours up, 3 hours down. We're going to have Joe Galina come on at the end of this segment, talk about his article that we started to talk about and got a little sidetracked, which is good. It's the free-flowing nature of this fantasy show. But one thing you should know about, speaking of baseball, and we got him coming up later today. So the rest of the schedule today, weekend fantasy update 12 to 3. Then in this league with Bogman and the Welsh, that's 3 to 6. And then Al Melchior is 6 to 7. And then Fantasy Football Frenzy from 7 to 8. So what I would say, Al Melchior is coming up at FanRag Fantasy Baseball from 6 to 7. You can create the ultimate dynasty keeper or redraft fantasy league using Fantrax's free commissioner product. Find out how it feels to have the deepest player pool, multi-team trades, plus player salary and contract options at your fingertips, all of which are fully customizable. And with Fantrax Treasurer, you can And with Fantrax Treasurer, you can set league entry fees and safely distribute payouts without a third party, so you don't have to track down owners for payment. The best part is there's no break in the action, and once the regular season ends, Fantrax leagues are immediately open for the next season. Find out why Fantrax is the home of fantasy sports and check out Fantrax.com today. That's Fantrax.com today. Enter promo code AL, that's A-L, at sign up for a chance to win 10 private consultations with Fantasy Baseball Hour host Al Melchior. It's valued at $109, so that's good stuff. That was a mouthful, that read. And
it
I should practice it before I do it time.
Mike, let me tell you
It was given to me during the show. It's not the producer's fault. It was given to me during the show. He got it late. I didn't see it. Whatever. But, yeah. So, anyway, it's awesome. You should go to Fantrax.com and enter promo code AL. That's A-L for a special discount.
Mike, can I just let you in on a little behind-the-scenes sneak peek? Man himself, Joe Galina, has walked into the studio and proceeded to find a catcher's helmet for the Mets, and he's not even a Mets fan, and he's just throwing it on. He's cracking me up right now, and I don't know how I don't know how I could do this program. Joe, keep it on, please. It's just so hysterical. I need Captain Considore for the save right now.
I am going to bring in Captain Considore in a moment, and Galina's going to come on with us in a few minutes to talk about his article that we were talking about, which was Under the Radar Pitchers and Jeff Samardzija and Chase Anderson and the like. But for the first ever NHL Trade Minute on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, here's Pete Considore. Pete, what big trades have happened, and when is the deadline?
All right, so the deadline is Monday, February 26th. We had a couple big trades. Yeah, oh yeah. We had a couple big trades.
I'm pumped.
The sarcastic pumpedness, I guess, is the word.
I do like hockey. I bash the NHL a little, but only because I don't really watch it anymore.
Right,
but I think it's a great sport.
So two Rangers trades just to bring up here. Michael Grabner was traded to the Devils for a second round pick.
Saw that.
And Igor Rykov, this is the first trade between the Rangers and the Devils ever. So bitter rivals, they don't like to trade. The Rangers traded away Nick Holden to Boston for Rob O'Gara, so two defensemen there. A big trade that happened this week that I'd like to talk about is a three-team trade between the Ottawa Senators, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Pittsburgh Penguins acquire Derek Brassard, Vegas Golden Knights acquire Ryan Reeves, and the Ottawa Senators acquire Ian Cole. Now, the cool thing about this is that the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Vegas Golden Knights are working on well, the Vegas Golden Knights helped Pittsburgh in retaining a part of Derek Brassard's salary so that a team like Winnipeg wouldn't take him up and be a problem for the Vegas Golden Knights down the playoffs in the West.
So they sort of blocked him from obtaining him.
Circle gets a square.
That's interesting. So, yeah, there you go.
Captain Considori is on fire today.
Also, look out for a Rick Nash or Ryan McDonough trade coming up. Rick Nash hasn't played in the past two games. He's been shopped around. Vegas Golden Knights was one of the teams that were kind of looking at him, too. So look for Rick Nash to be moved before Monday.
The Rangers are blowing it up.
Oh, fire sale. Complete fire sale.
Yeah. Well, that's the fun thing about the NHL. Now, some people don't like it, but the trade deadline is so late in the season that teams are just like, yeah, we're done. We're not going to fight for that eighth playoff spot. We're done blowing it up, and everything's on sale. So there you go. That was the NHL trade minute. Good job, Pete. So that's it. That's all we got on the NHL. I don't really have any comments on that because I don't know as many of the players involved. I know Michael Grabner and Rick Nash, but I don't know what they're going to bring to these teams. I do know that we did talk about it. George Kurtz and Pete Considori talked about it on this very program. It was called something different, but that Vegas would be good because the expansion draft leaned in their favor, just like it did when the Carolina Panthers and Jacksonville Jaguars had sort of an advantageous expansion draft 20-plus years ago. But Vegas is in first place. They have the most points in the league, and they continue to add pieces. So,
I really want an expansion draft in the NBA. I really want one.
I was listening to Bill Simmons the other night, his podcast, the Ringer podcast, whatever it's called.
I heard he made some outlandish LeBron statements. I don't know if it was on that podcast, but
I did not hear that outlandish LeBron thing. He was doing like an NBA recap, but he did talk in one of the podcasts I listened to was about expansion and where they might have teams and where that might work out. So he thinks they're going to expand. Sort of his plan for like the next 5 years, he thinks they'll expand because there's talk about changing the playoff format and going 1-16 as opposed to 8 from the East and 8 from the West, which I think is a good idea, but also potentially expansion as well. So anyway, that was that. Let's talk about one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about in the entire 3 hours of the show, except when I asked Rich Germanello, and that is the fact that college basketball is a flaming dumpster fire right now because many, many players have been implicated in this payment plan. Now, the University of Arizona is in the worst shape. I don't know if he's been fired yet, but I imagine today is Sean Miller's last day as the head coach of the University of Arizona. He's caught on federal wiretaps talking about paying $100,000 to their star, Ayton, who's expected to be the number two pick in the draft, or at least the top five pick. That's a tough one to get around. He's on wiretaps talking about administering payment to a player that's currently on the team. I'd imagine the player will be ineligible immediately and that he'll be fired. What's interesting is that his contract, despite the fact that he's going to be fired for cause, allows him to be paid 85% of what's remaining on that contract, which is north of $10 million. He will have set a torch to the program, and he's going to get paid $10 million to leave.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, this is a thing that I don't know where you land with all of this stuff. I'm firmly in the pay the players side of this whole thing. And again, the absurdity of it all continues to shine bright when Ayton is now not going to be able to play in the tournament, right? And people are now going to have a black mark on him while Miller is going to get fired and paid handsomely for it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know have you watched any Trae Young at all this year on ESPN by chance?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, of course.
They've stopped this, and I think it's because they were called out for it, perhaps. But during the Trae Young games, they would leave the ticker up the whole time with his stat line, the entirety of the game. And I think it's insane for us to pretend like people are not tuning into that game for Trae Young. So I appreciate that they're aware of that and they're going to put that up. But to then in turn say that Trae Young doesn't deserve money is nonsense to me. It's ludicrous. So this whole thing, like honestly, for DeAndre Ayton, good for him. 100 grand, got underpaid. Dennis Smith Jr., 75 grand, got underpaid. Good for him. they have to pay the players, and this is what the NCAA gets, because they should be paying the athletes who are bringing in this ludicrous amount of money.
The weird thing is, like, it ranges from guys getting paid $100,000 to guys, like, getting a meal.
Yeah, the report was a little... Listen, they got out as much as they could, but, like, Wendell Carter being on there for getting, like, going out to a dinner, come on. That's a little, like, that's nonsense.
Yeah. Bam Adebayo, $12,000. He received 36.5. Markelle Fultz, $10,000. Tim Quarterman, at the time a junior at LSU, $16,000. Diamond Stone, $14,000. And on and on and on. Yahoo Sports has been the ones that have been all over it. I suggest you go there. They have balance sheets and spreadsheets and all kinds of stuff. I'm looking at all these names. Loans to players. Kyle Kuzma, $9,500. Kyle Lowry, $5,900. I mean, it's going back a ways now. It's Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
This is going on a long time. Fred Van Vliet, $1,000 here. Isaiah Whitehead, $26,000. So there you go.
Are you on the side of paying the athletes or not?
I would not object to paying the athletes at all. I just honestly do not know how it would work.
I totally agree.
Full disclosure, I have worked professionally in the college sports landscape, and I see a lot of how stuff goes down. I'm not even close to any of this stuff. Just to be clear, I started on the business side working with schools, and I know that they don't even know how it would ever work. There's a lot of wringing hands of college administrators as to even the stipend that they get now is uneven because certain schools have valued their stipend to be more than others, even within the same conference. So it's a sticky situation when it comes to that. Obviously, it's total hypocrisy for these guys to be getting paid $10 million, Nick Saban $9 million. And the players do get a great opportunity to get a free education, in some instances at fine universities across the country. And some of them are even allowed to take real classes, as a little subtle shot there. But I would also state that I don't know how it would work, because if you pay Alabama football player, do you have to pay Iona volleyball player? I don't know. I just don't know how that would work out. And what kind of firestorm does that relegate you to? I have thought for some time that Division I football, the Power Five, to put that in quotes because it could include more teams than just the Power Five, will break away, become their own organization where they can conceivably pay players, act a little bit more in line with those values. Free education plus a legitimate stipend for those guys.
Yeah.
I think that could happen. Could you also do that with college basketball? It's hard to do it with 330 teams.
No, I think anybody that acts like it's as simple as like, oh, just pay them. Like, no, obviously there's so many things to work out. There is one thing that I think would be very interesting, and we're way, 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 way from it. But would it get to a point where then coaches begin to attempt to increase stipends, I guess, to prevent players from going into the draft or something of that nature? I think those are, and I mean, we're a way away from that, but that's something that would be interesting. But overall, like, it's very odd, because that point right there is a crucial one that you made. It's like, do I really have to pay, you know, the catcher on, you know, South Dakota as much as Tua Tagovailoa? And, you know, like, or like, what if Tua Tagovailoa wasn't highly recruited, then walked on? How much do I have to pay him now? Like, it's just, there are so many odd wrinkles to that whole process, but I don't think that just because it's incredibly difficult to understand or figure out as we are quickly talking about it doesn't mean that somebody shouldn't be attempting to figure it the hell out.
Yeah. But, you know, so many of these people are involved or are connected to the Golden Goose. They don't want to upset the apple cart and all this other kind of stuff. Jay Billis is out there. He's been pounding this drum for a long time. And no advancement whatsoever. They get a little bit of a stipend now that they didn't used to get. But I don't know what the end of it is going to look like, but this is going to be pretty ugly for a lot of coaches in particular, and banners coming down and players being ineligible, certainly in the short term. And I think it could get a lot worse. It is disturbing that people don't really seem to care about it because they say, yeah, of course it is. But
that's what Lonzo Ball said. He's like, everyone's getting paid. I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah, I think what people didn't realize is how widespread it is. We always assumed that it was the top few players, but these spreadsheets, this is just one agency with their players. There's tons of other agencies and other shoe companies that are doing this kind of stuff. So I think more people are going to go down for the count, including some huge names. Sean Miller's a huge name, but I think there'll be other ones like him that go down as well, and including some top of the food chain type of guys. So that's it. Is Joe Galina there? Is he
Joe's here, headset on. He's ready to go. The man.
Hey there, guys.
Okay. Look at him.
Hey, Joe. What's up, buddy? So you're coming up next with Tony Cincotta.
Yep.
My condolences for you having spent 3 hours with him on your Saturday afternoon.
I just hope he's not hungry. Last week, he was a little hungry when he came on. He was a little mean. It reminded me of that Snickers commercial. You know that Snickers commercial where the person's like upset and then they have a bite of
they're
Snickers.
Like, they show they're like they're like Patti LaBelle or something like that, like an angry Patti LaBelle.
I've had some peanuts today.
Oh, there he is. Thank goodness.
He got me fired up with Marcus Peters earlier. Tony had his A game. He was dropping analytics and stuff in like the first 15 minutes of the show. My voice hadn't even warmed up yet.
Tony keeps you on your toes. He's the man.
Yeah. We have so many repeats here that I feel I have to come on other shows now.
You have to be on every single show.
It's like the voice, like the voice of God. I didn't know he was on. Thank God I said something. I didn't say anything too bad.
Yeah, right.
You know?
That's a great point. It could have been super negative. So I'm going to ask you both this question. Joe Galina wrote a fantastic article, Tony, for the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package on under-the-radar pitchers for 2018. We talked about Jeff Samardzija a little bit, but he also mentioned that Chase Anderson has averaged 27 starts over the past three seasons. Joe's ultimate point in the article is that we're bleeding innings away from starting pitchers, so here's a few guys that you can count on to be workhorses in your rotation. Don't have to be the first guy off the board to you, but they can really bolster your pitching staff, and he likes Chase Anderson to be able to do that.
I like where he's going with this whole premise of innings, like, but we have all these analytics like we were talking about in baseball, but now we can't get enough innings from our starting pitcher. That innings are now going to be a situation. I think last year he had a K per nine almost of nine. I think his ERA will never happen again, but you can get 170 innings and get 165 strikeouts. Well, that's going to come in and that'll count for something in today's baseball.
Joe, Miles Mikolas is the last comment of the show. Your thoughts on him?
Like I said, he's like that ugly duckling. He went to go learn how to pitch in Japan and really learn his craft. So sleeper potential there.
Good stuff. Joe Galina and Tony Cincotta up next on Weekend Fantasy Update. Kevin Walsh and I are out. Talk to you next week.